get that out of my way because I always, my hands go around a lot when I talk, so I don't want to be knocking it. It's good to be here with you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me be part of what you do together. It's so important what you do, this gathering, these ways you think of the world, and it brings me such joy to be with you. And the all-woman team, yeah, brings me some joy, that does too. Thank you, Sarah. Thank you so much for that. And Beth, thank you for the meditation. So here we are, thinking about thinking and thinking about feeling. And, you know, last week, Brad was talking about this architecture of belief, right? And how we have this mental model that we create that we then use to interpret reality, just reminding you so we're all back to this sense of what a belief is. So we create something, and it gets kind of hardwired in our brains, and then what we believe leads the way. And we like that feeling a lot of knowing what's in our head, and we especially like the feeling of being right with it and leading with what we know is right. This exploration of how we know what we know is just such a delightful little thing for our brains to ponder. And I love my head. I love thinking about stuff. I love learning things. I love letting it rummage around and connect up and see where it goes. But I have been on my path particularly drawn to indigenous wisdom. So I begin to wonder how all these belief constructs in our head could be informed by the wisdom of our heart. Now, those of you who've heard me talk before, I talk about this almost every time because it's so core to shamanic beliefs and understandings, is that there's these three ways we meet the world. And I'm actually going to use the Quechua word today for them because that honors my teachers in that way. One way we meet the world is with our head knowing, which is called yache. We can meet the world through everything we know, the yache. We can meet the world through our heart knowing, our mune. And we can meet the world through our doing, or our kind of service, which is yanki. So yache, mune, yanki all have to be in balance with each other. If any one of them starts to overdo, like let's say you're overworking, overserving, you can get out of balance. So we strive to keep these three centers in balance. So knowing that then, what is this heart knowledge? My teacher has described it as a kind of GPS system for your life. Like just how you punch it in your car where you're going somewhere and it gets you there. If we have a heart-directed GPS, we kind of punch in where we want to go. I want to be kind. I want to be loving. We kind of punch that in and then let the heart find the way to that, this navigational GPS. Now, they also talk about how our heart has its own access running through it. See, this is the problem with the microphone. It has this axis, right, running right through the center of our heart. And this axis creates these ways that we can gather knowledge. So we can get it from above, beneath. We can get it on this plane, from each other, from things we learn. And all of it is sacred knowing. So this axis goes over our hearts. And it becomes the way we take in information. So when information enters this axis, it's going to come from one of those directions, and then our heart has to filter it. Think about it like a filter. Our heart has to filter that information coming in, and we ask, is whatever is coming in, does it resonate with my heart? Does it make sense? Does it, in not sense up here, but sense down here, does it fit? Does it resonate? Or does it create a dissonance? When our heart starts to resonate with something, then we're drawn toward healing. We're drawn toward our true nature. We're drawn toward this desire to really make everything in life beautiful. And when what we're taking in causes dissonance, we know it, right? We know when we're in something and it just makes you a little irritated, or maybe a lot irritated. You know it. It's dissonance. And so when that information enters, we ask ourselves, is it resonant? Is it dissonant? And then we take it in based on that. Now, in Indigenous understanding, this axis of the heart actually exists in the whole universe. It's not just our little hearts, but it's out there also, that the universe itself connects to all things. And when our individual little axis can connect to that big axis, that's when our heartbeat feels as one with everything. Now that feeling can be extremely fleeting, this sense of I am connected to everything. But it's the truth that our little hearts and that big heart, when we connect it, allows us to see the unity, not what divides us, but what brings us together. When we are, and we get to experience that at various times. It's when we feel centered, or it's when we're creating something, right? Have you ever created anything? It's like you're connecting to something bigger than you. When you're healing, when you're loving, there's this sense of oneness that we get to draw into our very own hearts. And so many of us here, I know, use these practices of things like meditation or yoga or whatever it is that helps us kind of connect to something bigger, ceremonies, journey work. It helps us access that oneness, the heart of all being. So that's kind of my understanding of this architecture of the heart and how it all connects us. But now we have to get down to the hard work of how do we work with the heart? How do we let the heart lead? And it's, you know, in this culture, it's hard because I think all of us were raised to kind of minimize the heart a little, put it behind us, or, you know, let it be, you know, not what leads the way. We love our heads so much and lead with that. Or some of us love our service so much and lead with that. But the heart, it's a little more complicated. Usually in our culture, we go there in an act of desperation. Like, I have thought about this thing, I've read about it, I've done everything I can to sort it out, but my mind is still all cluttered and I just can't seem to figure it out. And we get desperate, and sometimes we'll slip into our heart. Or sometimes we've had something happening in our lives and we've done everything we can to sort it out, to make it right, to soothe everybody, and nothing's helping. We desperately need something different. And so we do things like, don't know what else to do, I'm going to eat a whole carton of Oreos. I'm going to watch and binge watch all the old episodes of Star Trek that I can find. I'm going to pick up my phone and play endless games of Candy Crush. Not that I have ever done any of those things, but those could be my three favorite things to do when I'm really off center. Because that's what happens. When our heart wants to talk and it's uncomfortable, we try to avoid it, or we cover it over with something that's going to try to soothe us, for good or ill. I don't know if Oreos work for you, but they're a delicious, if you don't know, a delicious little chocolate cookie. It has this filling in it. So we resort to those things rather than sit with our heart. Because I'm going to confess to you that heart knowledge is hard knowledge to live in. But maybe this will help. Really, there's only three things you have to remember about what can cause our heart to be heavy. Just three. And you can deal with those. Just three easy things. The first one is that makes our heart heavy is the past. The second thing that makes our heart heavy is the present. The third thing that makes our heart heavy is the future. Welcome to human life, right? So let me talk about each of those just briefly. First, the past. All of us. You don't get to be human without it. All of us have places that we've been hurt. Our little hearts have been hurt. We've been wounded. Sometimes it's done unintentionally by people who love us. They don't even know, maybe, that they've hurt us in such deep ways. Sometimes it's intentional. People set out to be a bully or hurt you with words. Sometimes it's a trauma, something way out of your control that happened. And because it's in the past, it's often something from our childhood. It's like these things have happened to our heart, and even our heart gets hardwired to respond in a certain way. It doesn't know how to process the trauma, the hurt. So we do something like, oh, I don't know, I know that there are some of you here, and I promised I wouldn't point any fingers, but some of you have made a decision that you just leave the past behind. What good does it do to look at that stuff? It doesn't change anything. I'm just going to leave it behind, those wounds, those traumas, and move on. But the problem with that is when you leave it behind, it's always there. It's kind of just right behind you. And sometimes it can sneak up. And when it sneaks up, sometimes we do things that aren't in our best, highest centered self. We can lash out with anger. We can move into eating Oreos. We can, whatever it might be, when we're not paying attention to that, it can catch us off guard. When our heart can make space for what we've suffered to be named, then it can be like an exhale. Whew. It doesn't mean you have to dwell there, but I don't think we do ourselves any good by thinking we've left something behind that's so important to our heart. Now, I don't blame you if you've done that, because it's what we all learn to do. Just buck up, move on, pull up your boots and go. But we get a chance now to explore it differently. When we do that, we can find joy again in our heart, in its rightful place. Now, sometimes you do need a companion with you on this work. It could be a therapist, a healer, a wise elder, a good friend. But this work, when you're looking back, it's hard work. Because everything in our little heart, in our system, wants to just push it aside. And if we can move into it, not to solve it, not to change it, just to exhale it, then our heart can lead in a different way. So that's the past. And then the present. Whew. The present. So first, before we even think about the present out there, I want you to think about the present in your own life. What are you facing? Maybe there's an illness or a physical limitation that's difficult. Maybe you're dealing with grief. Maybe you have a relationship that's struggling and you just can't find your footing. You don't know what the future will hold for it. Maybe you're stuck in patterns of ways that you're responding that aren't helpful. Maybe you overconsume substances. There's no judgment about it. It's just this noticing of how we're doing as we deal with all of these things in our present. Being in a body, it's hard. It's hard. We don't like to think that because we've been taught otherwise. But suffering happens. And when suffering visits me, because it visits all of us, I try not to move into the why me, poor me. I try not to move into the this is your fault. I try not to move into anything other than settling in and breathing in my heart. Because I know that suffering is visiting me and I can listen and learn from it. Might not be able to change it, but I can listen. I can learn. I can let it lead me. So our own struggles are there. And then if we surround ourselves with the world, whew, this is difficult. The world is facing challenges so much bigger than us. And so much of what is happening does not resonate with our little hearts. So it pulls us away from our heart. And the indigenous understanding is, remember that your way home is the way to your heart. That's the only way home. When we're distracted by all of these things, the most important thing is our own heart, believe it or not. It's not a self-centered thing. It's a healed self thing. So we let it guide us, right? We let our heart guide us, this GPS, back to our center so that we know how to face those challenges, what to do that resonates with us. And then, of course, there's the future. The shamans will speak of the importance of this. Excuse me. When enough of us are healing the heart, leading with the heart, it's going to create a movement of unity. We've lived in a world of dualism, right? That's the world we live in. This against that. Everything is set this way in dualism. The age of unity will invite something different, will let us emerge in a different way. We don't even know what the future holds. But if we can resolve this in our own heart, it will, they believe, make a big difference in how we move into this next age, an age of unity. So there are, now I'm just going to give you three simple practices that you could do for your heart. Okay? With me still? Three things, simple things that you can do to tend to your heart. The first one is to learn the language of the heart, which is music. Oh, don't you have some music you love that like you can feel it open your heart when you listen to it? Or the words or the way the song moves just kind of woof. Yeah, that's the language of the heart. And we want to be able to access that, which is the easiest thing to access when we're feeling unsettled, to find some music that can just settle us in our heart. My heart recently was really heavy with everything that was happening in Minneapolis. I have family near there. It was just overwhelming to me. And I was so moved by the people who gathered in the neighborhoods, not to protest, though I'm all about protest, not to protest, but to sing. They would go into the neighborhoods of people who were the most like at risk, who were afraid to maybe come out of their homes. And instead of marching with protest signs, they just simply went up and down the streets and they sang. Hold on, hold on, my dear ones, here comes the dawn. Hold on, hold on, my dear ones, here comes the dawn. Feel it? What did that song change? It's a question to ask ourselves. How did music change? What did it change? Maybe we want it to change a whole system out there that's just dysfunctional, but it doesn't. It changes the heart. When you know you're not alone, when you know there's some hope, music can do that. Opens it up. So perhaps each day you do this practice. If you're starting to feel off kilter, hum, or listen to music, or sing it, and then just sit in that openness that it creates, listening for the teaching, the guidance, the way it resonates with your heart. So simple, music. The second thing you could do as a practice is to rest your eyes upon beauty. Perhaps each day when you find yourself getting distracted by your phone, set it down and lift your eyes and look outside or get outside and let your eyes, your weary, weary eyes, just rest on something beautiful. The way the little snowdrop flowers are just opening and then bending in reverence to the earth. Oh. The way the oak tree is still hanging on to some of those brown leaves, and in this wind, they rustle and sing. Oh. Or the way the colors at the sunrise so paint the trees. Rest your eyes on beauty, and in that moment, let your heart expand and breathe. The third practice you could do, so we've got music, we've got rest your eyes on beauty. Those are so easy, right? You're going to do them? Yeah, do them. And the third one is just to explore the architecture of your heart. So when you get stressed about anything, whatever it might be that's happened, you're just going to close your eyes and drop into your heart. And when I do that, I actually see my little heart, little kind of enclosed little spot. And I kind of see that axis that's running through it. And then I take my heart and I just fill it. I fill it with light. I fill it with a golden light so that my heart chamber is calm. And then some words from my teacher, Mikkel, who I shared some things in the bulletin that he's written. But he says this: when you're in your heart, first turn toward what hurts. First, turn toward what hurts. Do not flee. Do not argue with the pain. Simply see it and say, I know you are here. And then take that pain, hold it gently, like you would cradle an overtired child, without blame, without demand. Let your awareness be warm. Let your heart be unarmed. Just stay. Do not rush the healing. Presence is always medicine. And something begins to loosen. What was tight softens. What was heavy grows light. Not by force, but by being held in love. I just love that advice. Just be with whatever is going on. And when I'm in my golden heart, I look around at it, and I kind of polish up those little places that have been wounded by things said or done this week, and just sort of let my heart fill and glow again. Now, this heart work, those three practices, don't mean you don't spend time in your head. Of course you do. Of course you're still in service. But a little more time for the heart to let it lead the way. We just need to be open to our mune, to this wisdom of knowing. And this way of knowing, it will change you. So may this be our medicine, our calling, our offering to the world, to meet each day with our hearts resonating and connected. May it be